Good morning or afternoon, everyone, and welcome to EMForum.org. I am Amy Sebring and will serve as your host and moderator today. We are very glad you could join us. We hope your summer is going well, but I do expect there are a few folks on vacation. For any first-timers, we will be providing some instructions as we go along so you can relax and participate with us. We do want you to take part in this discussion. If you need assistance, please select Help Desk from the drop-down options in the Q&A panel, and our associate, Lori Weaver, will try to assist you. The last program we did focused on the needs of children was back in 2009, before the National Commission on Children and Disasters had issued its final report in 2010. So it is definitely time for an update and a look at how one state, at least, has been implementing the recommendations. First, for any first-timers, we will begin with an overview presentation, and then we will proceed with your questions and comments. We will provide further instructions just before we begin that part of the program, but we ask you not to submit your question or comment until that time. You may wish to make a note of any questions you have as we go along. Today's recording and a copy of the slides will be available from our site later this afternoon. And then a transcript will be available early next week. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce Nancy Morris, Emergency Preparedness Planner for the Indiana Department of Homeland Security. She joined the agency in 2007 and has worked on various emergency preparedness projects, focusing on topics such as childcare and people with disabilities. Most recently, Nancy worked on the Indiana Planning Guide that is our topic today. Please do check out the background page for additional details and links to related resources. Welcome, Nancy. Thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today. And I now turn the floor over to you to start us off, please.
Thanks, Amy. I appreciate the invite, and I get to talk about something that I'm very passionate about and also I have to say I'm very proud of is our emergency response planning guide that we developed for child care providers. Indiana has about 4,500 child care centers throughout the state that serves about 100,000 kids at any given time. So when we looked at this, we were like, that's a lot of kids that we have to look at what actually needs to be, that they need to have prepared plans, preparedness plans for. Child care providers were kind of given that information that you guys need to have emergency plans that are all-encompassing, or as we in the emergency management world like to say, comprehensive. But they weren't really given any guidance as far as what or how or what actually needed to be in those documents. And so we looked at putting together a team of experts, subject matter experts, to put together this planning guide. As Amy said, what we did was we looked at the National Commission on Children and Disasters and used basically some of the information that was in there. It was established in 2007 that said that after Katrina and Rita and a couple of other hurricane things that might have happened and some disasters, and they looked at it and said, you know, we need to really start focusing some of our attention and some of those resources on children during times of a disaster. They created a report of state of emergency preparedness, and they kind of did a study on the impact on the existing public policy. And then they delivered this report to Congress in 2010 and to the President. So we looked at who were some of our partners needed to be. Well, in that guide, the National Commission on Children and Disasters, it kind of outlined who some of those folks needed to be. So we looked at our Indiana Association of Child Care Resource and Referral, and that organization is actually one that the child care centers go to for information, training, education, how do I become a child care provider in the state of Indiana. And then it's also a resource that parents can go to if they are looking for a child care facility. I'm not sure if every state has one, but I'm almost positive that they do. We also have the Indiana Department of Education. We have the Indiana School Safety Specialist Academy, and I'm actually a certified school safety specialist through this. And we looked at is the difference between education in the school systems and education of child care is only the size and the ages of the kiddos that these folks are taking care of. They kind of have the same mission, which is to make sure that when those kids are in their care, that they are in a safe and secure environment so that they can learn better. So we brought on some partners from the Department of Education. We also brought in our Department of Environmental Management because they're the ones that are focusing, they focus on the healthy kids aspect. They have a healthy environment aspect of their program that really focuses on air quality and conditions, pest controls, and things like that for their for a child care center. Obviously, our agency, the Planning and Assessment Division, that would be me, and our state fire marshals. Our state fire marshal's office, the section chief that we had as part of our partner, as our partner on this, he's kind of the guy that oversees all of the inspectors that goes out into these child care facilities and kind of sees where, you know, they might be having some issues and some concerns or might have questions. And so whenever we get questions, even now, he's kind of my go-to guy as far as, okay, so how about this and why can't they do that? And he had a very big piece in helping us educate some of us on the fire code in general. And then our Bureau of Child Care, that's the licensing agency for them, for the child care providers in the state of Indiana. Indiana has basically three types of child care facilities. We have our licensed facilities. Basically, it's your big name, probably some of your big name or big centers. You have your in-home child care facilities, and you have your ministry child care facilities. But what we wanted to do was we wanted to make sure that this was something that was put together that no matter whether you were a child care facility of two kids or that you had 100 kids, that you were able to utilize the information that's in this guide. We also invited our folks, our friends from the Indiana School of Medicine, the Emergency Medical Services for Children. That's actually part of Riley Children's Hospital, which is a world-renowned hospital for children here in Indiana and in the Indianapolis area. And we thought, well, they would be a good partner to have on board because they see some of the effects afterwards. So how do we prevent, like, child burns and some of the other things that they might see in their hospital facility? And then, of course, our State Department of Health, because they have all the guidelines as far as what determines a medical condition for a child care facility, when there's an outbreak, how do they determine that kind of information. So that's why we included them as a planning partner. We do like to have purpose statements. So when we sat down and we really talked about this, we were like, okay, so what is our main goal of putting together this document? And what we basically wanted to do is we wanted to give them the basic preparedness information, but not just give them that information, but give them a little bit of planning information that goes along with it. A lot of planning considerations, things to think about. So we created five goals that would help educate those providers on developing what we refer to as the emergency response plan or their emergency action plans. Depending on the facility that you talk to, they use that term interchangeably. So I might say emergency action plan, but I'm also referring, it's also the emergency response plan. But creating and executing an emergency evacuation plan. They know how to get the kids out, but what do they do with them if they can't get them back into the building in a timely manner? What if they can't get into the building because it's a permanent evacuation? Collecting and posting emergency numbers. We went through, and as we were putting together the guide and we were talking about some of the agencies that needed to be a part of it, it was interesting because so we were like, oh, you know, we never thought about adding the IDEM, the Department of Environmental Management, because if you are on a well, you need to contact them to come out and have your well checked. We hadn't thought about adding them. We also let child care providers review the guide in its early stages to kind of get their feedback on it and kind of give us some information. And one of the things that they really liked, the form that's in the back, excuse me, they like the form that was in the back that had all of that information because it was a one-stop shop that they could put all of their phone numbers in there. And one of the one of the comments that we got back was the fact that they were very excited that we would put in, like, contacting your insurance provider or contacting another agency, your child care facility that might be across the street from you. So those were kind of some of the things that we put that information in there and making sure that also they had their first responders and other emergency numbers. We talked about reviewing and posting the guides on how to handle an emergency in a child care setting. You know, they really hadn't been told what to do. You know, okay, I got to post the fire evacuation routes and stuff on my wall, but what if I need to evacuate for something other than a fire? What if I need to do something different? So we kind of helped put together some points for them on that. We talked about training staff on specific roles and responsibilities during an emergency. Basically, we just took the ICS structure and followed it and said, okay, so who's going to do what? And break it down into the ICS terms. And then also more looking at children with special needs and health needs and some that have disabilities during an emergency. Riley Children's Hospital really played a big part in that because they gave us that all-encompassing form and things to think about that we hadn't necessarily considered when you're planning for children that might have some type of a health need. As I said earlier, we talked about the Incident Command System and NIMS, and basically what our guide does is it follows that, and it discusses the ICS and the NIMS program. It provides suggested roles and responsibilities. It includes a checklist that includes the staff, the maintenance, and the parents. Because we all know that in a time of disaster, we all think that somebody else is going to do something, and then maybe that doesn't get done. So if you have identified who does what and has those responsibilities lined out ahead of time and having a backup person in place, and then you can have that, you know, nobody's going to sit there and go, okay, who's going to do what? Currently, Indiana's requirements, we have a fire, smoke, and bomb threat emergencies, tornado, and earthquake. Those are really all of the requirements for the state of Indiana. So, you know, we all know that in the child care setting, things go beyond those requirements, and there are things that they may not know how to handle. We also wanted them to understand that emergency planning, it's not like the good idea fairy came and said, hey, you guys need to do this. It really, there is some good points to having an emergency plan in place. First of all, it protects the lives of the children and staff. It lessens the impact on public and private property. It also provides an understanding of those strengths and limitations. If they know where their strong points are, they can build upon that. And if they know what their limitations are, then they know that those are some resources that they might need to reach out to from some of the partners, some of their planning partners, their emergency management community, their first responders, but also the private sector in general. As I said earlier, there are laws in place. So if it's a fire, a bomb threat, how are you going to handle that situation? So having a plan that covers those, you can use that. There's a liability for the provider. If you think about it, a child care provider has one of a parent's most precious assets, their children. And so making sure that you give them that satisfaction or that assurance that their child is going to be taken care of. It also helps prevent chaos among the parents, the children, and staff. I'll tell you a true story. My son was in first grade, and I was very new to the emergency management community. Well, it was towards the end of the school year of his first year in school, and he came home from school one day, and he says, hey, Mommy, guess what I did today? And I said, I don't know. What did you do today? And he goes, they loaded us all on the bus and drove us around the block, and then we got off the bus. And I said, well, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard of. Why did they do that? And he goes, well, they said in case we have to evacuate the school. Because where our son, where my son's school is, there's a major railroad right behind it. And there's like seven schools within that area close to those railroad tracks. Well, lo and behold, a year later, the exact same scenario had to take place because a train had derailed, and they had to evacuate the school. For 3.5 hours, I did not know where my son was. They did not give that information out. They didn't tell me. You know, I was picking up bits and pieces off of the news media. For me, my one saving grace was, now wait a minute, they just did this exercise a year ago. By that time, I had been in the emergency management community a little bit longer and had understood what they were doing and what the process was, so I wasn't going to add to the chaos. But, and since then, they have taken steps to rectify those any type of those issues. But there was chaos among the parents who didn't understand where their kids were at and what they were going to be doing with them. The children were safe, and the staff knew exactly what they were going to need to do should they be relocated to another facility, which is basically what happened to them. So they don't, they didn't have necessarily have anything in their plan about how they were going to notify parents. Now that's been taken care of, and so now we're not as chaotic. It also helps to improve recovery time, because if a child care facility doesn't get back up and running, then the community itself is going to struggle even longer after if it's a disaster in the community itself, say after a flood or a tornado, because the parents aren't going to be able to take their kids to child care and have the child care facility take care of their kids while they go to work, which therefore stimulates the economy, so on and so forth. And then obviously if the child care center doesn't open, they can't make money in the process as well. So it's kind of like one of those big vicious cycles. So as I said, the information in the guide, we basically look at the 2010 Indiana's Hazard Index risk assessments and basically just provided some information that's in there. We gave a brief description of what the county EMAs and other local partners in the community are going to do, and because a lot of them don't even know that we are required to have a county EMA, nor do they know who they are or how to reach them. So we also give them information on how to do that. We talk about illness prevention, where there's a matrix in there that kind of breaks it out and tells them, okay, here's some things to think about if you are, you know, your children are experiencing this, and it's actually information that came from the CDC. We talk about emergency actions in a matrix. If, for example, you're needing to go into, let's say, a lockdown, what are some steps that I need to take? And it's kind of like, it's just that I use it as a quick snapshot. It says, okay, I've got a potentially violent situation and I might need to go to lockdown, and here's the steps I need to do. And we also talk about child care planning considerations. What are some things that we might need to think about? As I said earlier, we talk about the roles and responsibilities of the staff. Who's going to do what when? We give them an emergency supply list. It's a suggested emergency supply list. You know, we all hear about taking those little backpacks and making sure that we have them, but maybe I have a facility of 100 kids. I'm not going to need, how am I going to carry, you know, 3,000 bottles of water for these kids and yet be able to do that? So we talk about at least having the emergency supplies to get you to through the next 24 hours. But we also suggest to them putting that information in a, or putting that those supplies in like a garbage tub and wheeling it out the door like you would putting the kids in one of those evacu cribs. We talk about the communication of the emergency response plan, making sure that your emergency responders know what's in your plan, that you've, you know, we like to say we don't exchange business cards during a disaster. So having those folks at your planning table and talking to them ahead of time saying, hey, by the way, here's some information that you might need to know. This is why, this is where I am. Most importantly, identifying the location, because if you're a small in-home child care center or you're in like a shopping center, they may not know that you are in that facility. And then also that reunification piece. How are we going to make sure that Susie, little Susie, goes home home with Susie's mom and dad or custodial guardian or parent, and not somebody like me who just says, oh, yeah, I'm Susie's parent, but yet I'm not. And so making sure that, we've addressed that in that plan, too, as far as how are we going to make sure that that is in place. We talk about emergency drills and procedures. We talk about the importance of doing lockdowns in our guide. We talk about the importance of doing fire drills, evacuation. We talk about doing a reverse evacuation. We talk about handling medical illnesses and emergencies and disease outbreaks. How are you going to notify parents that they can't bring their kids in because little Susie's had the chicken pox or another illness that may have to have your facility closed for a few days? What are some special considerations for children that have any kind of health care needs? Allergies are a big thing right now, and so we made sure to outline some of that stuff that, you know, you need to think about when you're grabbing your first aid kit. Do you have those maintenance medications for those children that may have a type of an allergy? And then also, how are you recovering from an emergency? We talked about the staff training resources. We really pushed the information about FEMA and those courses that are in FEMA that really outline the child care industry. We talk about the resources for the providers. I believe it's the doonething.org, I think is the name of it, and it sends you out like a little monthly reminder as far as what you need to do to make a personal plan. We give that as a resource for them to look at doing that for their child care facility on a regular basis, and I believe that came from the Michigan area. We talk about the tabs for specific issues. We've created a tab section, and in the back of the tabs it has a lot of different information in there that talks about, you know, we give them the Indiana code for should you have to close your facility, and here's the reasons why you have to close your facility. We give them information that they can utilize that will have that information in there about who's going to do what. What are some of those responsibilities that need to be outlined? We also give them the forms that need to be that they can reproduce in their centers. Sometimes they have that stuff. They've already created that stuff, but why recreate the wheel? Let's just use what has been some other good best practices. As I talked about earlier, here's the emergency action categories. And so it just kind of gives you a little bit of what's the threat or the hazard and what am I going to have to do. It's a very quick snapshot. Am I going to have to lock down? Am I going to have to shelter in place? Am I going to have to think about temporary evacuation? Or am I going to have to think about a permanent evacuation? We talk about training our staff and the programs, but also who's going to write those policies and who's going to be responsible for training those staff. We talk about practice. You have to practice, practice, practice. You practice with the kids and the staff, and you practice without the staff and children. You know, you kind of, maybe you practice with the children and not the staff, or you practice with the staff and not the children, or you run the scenarios through your own head if you're the director of the facility going, okay, yeah, that probably would work in this case, but maybe it wouldn't work if it was our evaluation or our evacuation spot is where they pile the snow up. Well, then if you're having to evacuate your facility on a snowy day, that may not be a good place to do that. And again, how are you notifying your parents that there's an issue, and how are you going to make sure that those kiddos are reunited with the right people? We talked about the courses from FEMA, and as you see there, item number 2 on the list is your introduction to ICS for schools. As I said earlier, it doesn't matter whether the schools, if it's a school that does K through 12, or we're looking at infant through kindergarten, it's still kind of, they still have that same mission, and the ICS principles are used in many different settings. I actually used somewhat of the ICS principles when I had a party at my house for the 4th of July. Who's doing what? That's my logistics section. So my husband, you're in charge of all the food and the cooking and making sure that that happens. You know, my son, you're in charge of entertainment, so you're the operations section. And it's kind of looks, you know, when you look at it from that standpoint, you kind of see, oh, yeah, well, that would probably work under this. We talk about fundamentals of emergency management. We felt that the child care providers needed to have at least the basics of how the emergency management community works. First of all, it gives them a better understanding of the terminology that first responders may be using, and it also gives them that information of how that whole system works to begin with. Then in the last two courses, we talk about the National Incident Management System, since that's how everything kind of gets tied in together, and then how they play a big role in that aspect of it. And then that community preparedness, how just doing simple activities can involve everyone. So now as we move forward with our guide, those are the two sites that you can actually get a copy of our guide for the state of Indiana. We're looking at developing a training program with the Bureau of Child Care and for their staff and their consultants. And then we're going to be putting an online training program that's out there for providers. This online training program will be for child care providers who might need to do training on demand, or they might just be able to have to do training. They can get CEU credits for it. We're still working on how that's going to look and what that's going to do, and I had a meeting last Friday with the Bureau of Child Care to kind of see how we're going to get that information out to them and get it, you know, put together. Pretty much that's all I have. Does anybody have any questions?
Thank you very much, Nancy. Appreciate that overview, and I guess we can probably get into some more details in response to particular questions. In order to ask a question or make a comment, just select host from the drop-down menu in the Q&A panel, then type and I'm going to go ahead and close the chat window right now so we don't get confused about which one to put it in. All right, and then I will read any questions or comments aloud, and our guests will respond via the bridge. Please do keep your question or comment related to today's topic and reasonably concise. And we are ready to begin now, so please do enter your comment or question at any time. And while we are waiting for a few of those, Nancy, you know, I know you've issued this guide fairly recently. Have you had a chance to get any feedback from child care providers on the completed guide?
We have, and it's been very well received. Child care providers love the guide. We actually had one child care center tell our local news media that what was really great about this guide was it worked, which we were all very happy to hear that, because it wasn't just something that was a good idea, that the good idea fairy came and visited everyone, that if we actually put together a document that had good information in it that child care centers were able to use.
Very good. How long did it take you to work through this process with all your partners?
With all of our partners and everything, we actually started June the 6th of last year with our goal of having it completed and signed off and ready to be rolled out at the Indiana Association for Education of Young Children Conference that is held in April of this year. And we had it done by November of last year. And it was just going through its revision process and everybody reviewing it. So I would say probably to say that it was completely done was by February.
Fantastic. Okay, we do now have some questions for you. One from William Warren, I believe, and he says, I was surprised that Indiana law doesn't require the possibility of a school shooter be addressed. Have you addressed this in the guide? And I would just, I believe you have, because I think it was showing up on that matrix.
Yes, we did talk about lockdown procedures. You know, now with a lot of the information of the new education that's coming about how to you know, maybe run, hide, fight. Some of us may have seen those videos from the Department of Homeland Security. They may have, you know, we're looking at revising that as how that's going to work in a child care setting, but we do still use the turn the lights out, close and lock the door, hide under the furniture, hide in the closet. We still use that principle because at the time when we were doing our guide, that was the best practice. That was what was being looked at. As far as the first part of your question, you're surprised that we don't have a possibility school shooter. Remember, schools are different than child care centers. So what the school system might be required to have, Indiana law doesn't look at it as a child care setting in the same aspect.
Thank you. The question from Dee Bojez, and she says, have you covered child care for after school programs when they are handled by providers other than school staff, i.e. independent child care centers?
No, not really. I'm assuming, like, how do you handle the – I'm assuming that question was more of a how do you handle, like, if I'm a ABC child care center and I'm going to pick up students at a school and bring them back to my facility as part of my before and after school care program. We have not – I singled that part of it out, but this plan is all-encompassing and can make it – can be flexible enough to where that program would work in with it no matter what you did.
Right. All right, I'll just come back to Dee. She says, no, they lease space at school to handle child care, but that's all right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I do know a lot of the school programs are looking at this guide as well and how they are going to have their after-school care programs look at that aspect of it and be able to implement that, because a lot of those facilities are used, a lot of child care facilities are still in schools, and so, you know, making sure that they are incorporated into that program.
Very good. I've got a question from Dorna Oliver, which I will address, and she says, is it possible to send this guide out to those in attendance? Dorna, we do have a link directly, which will get you right to it on our homepage at emforum.org, also on the background page for today. And if you're on our mailing list, we will be sending out a follow-up email with some links early next week. Okay, I have a question from Joe Moss, and actually a couple. I'll take them together. She asks, how do you help providers address specifics for fire, lockdown, weather, et cetera, or what guidance do you give them for same? And then she goes on to ask, regarding the run, hide, fight, is that really possible for child care settings, in your opinion? And I'll get them up there where you can see them. So you can refer back.
You help providers address specifics. Okay, so the first part is how do you help providers address specifics for fire, lockdown, weather, what guidance do you give them? Based on whatever the situation is, we tell them, you know, if you're going to have a shelter in place, what's the proper method for sheltering in place? What's the proper method for a fire if you're going to evacuate? What are some planning considerations that you need to think about when you're doing an evacuation? Are you going to be evacuating temporarily? What about if you can't, you know, you're going to have to go outside and it's freezing cold? What are some of the provisions that you might need to make sure that you've got those extra emergency supplies with you, that you might have, like, blankets or something thrown in the bag that you're going to be able to help those keep those kids warm in the process? So we kind of do address some of that information that's in there, and we give them various guidance. If you look at our guide, it'll give you a lot of good information and some things to think about when you're looking at it in general. And then, in my opinion, do I think the run, hide, fight is possible for child care settings? That's up for debate. And I'm sure that there are certain things that they can do in a child care setting. like fortifying their room, barricading it to keep the active shooter potentially out of the room. But it's actually, you know, that one I don't know. I have mixed feelings on, and I know that that's going to be probably a discussion that's going to, as far as with child care providers, that's going to have to be a over my pay grade, so to speak.
Okay. All right. I've got a question from Isabel McCurdy, and she asks, how are the parents incorporated into this plan? You did allude to parents a couple of times, but perhaps you can expand a little bit.
We highly recommend that they have parents as part of their planning team, because parents might have better ideas than what we might think of. Not to mention, some of those parents may be first responders.
Right.
So they may have that those abilities to sit there and go, well, you know what, we could bring this resource to the table. Those parents that may not be first responders, they still might say, you know what, if in the event of an emergency, I could do this or I can do that. And if they understand what their role is in the disaster, it makes it a lot less chaotic.
Very good. One of the things that I noticed as you went along was the idea of incorporating how to find their local emergency management, and that's good to say. Okay, I have a question from the City of Detroit Homeland Security, who asks, how does ICS for Schools support child care facilities, or relate to child care facilities, I presume?
It relates to child care facilities only based on the principles that are behind it, that the principles of ICS. Doesn't matter what, you know, whether it's ICS for Schools or ICS, just the regular ICS program. It's pretty much just an incident command. It talks about what it needs to look like, what needs to happen, who needs to do what. It outlines those roles and responsibilities. And so that's just a good one of those information things that as child care providers are going through it, they are at least able to think about, oh, yeah, that would work in my facility. Not saying it works in all of them, but they can pick out what actually will work in theirs.
Okay, I have a question from Margaret Cushing, and it's the last one we've got on the list, so if anybody else has any further questions or comments, please do go ahead and get them entered. Margaret asks, what guidance do you give for handling traumatic stress in children and staff after a disaster, if you do?
We do, actually. We recommend that Indiana has our division of mental health team. And we recommend that they contact them after a disaster, and that team is actually trained specifically on how to handle children after a traumatic event.
I imagine, and it sounds like you're incorporating this into the guide, is part of what you're trying to do with this guide is educate these providers as to what resources may be available to support them.
Yes, absolutely. We, you know, we all have a little bit of piece of the pie, but if I only know what my piece is and I don't know what that is as far as making our homeland in general safe and secure, if I only know that, okay, this is all I'm responsible for, that's all I'm going to look at. And I'm not necessarily going to look at what, you know, I'm going to go, oh, gosh, I need a school bus. I don't know how to get a school bus. But I'm not thinking about calling my school that's right next door to me saying, hey, during a disaster, can you come over and pick up my 8 kids that I have that I'm responsible for? I'm just giving that as a general scenario. But so it's kind of, you know, think about this when we talk about our planning considerations. Think about this and look at those resources and really start looking at those resources. Think outside the box. Think big picture as far as what are you going to do. The other thing that we talk about in our plan is how media can be your friend or they can be your worst enemy, and making sure that when you're using the media, you use them to be your friend and not your enemy.
Are you seeing any interest from that child provider community in using various social media tools to get word out to parents and so forth?
We did not address that in this version of the guide. That has been something that we're already starting the conversations of our next version, and that's one of the things that we talk about is incorporating that aspect of it.
Right.
But I do have childcare providers that talk about how they use Facebook, and they use Twitter, and they use text messaging and cell phones to get the word out that maybe there's an issue, or even if it's like, hey, you know, we're going to be having a cookout at ABC's daycare today. Come join us. You know, they use those same areas.
Very good. So are you planning to do future revision?
Oh, absolutely. We believe no document is ever completely done. I actually have a coworker who his philosophy is the worst. There's only one thing that's a hazardous material in any facility, and that's dust on a plan.
There you go. Good one. Okay, well, I've got your I don't have any more questions on the queue. I have put up your contact information here again just in case anybody, thinks of something afterwards that you can and they can contact you offline. But, folks, before you do go, please take a moment to give us a little feedback. And, Nancy, I want to say thank you so much. You obviously just have a passion for this, and that definitely comes through. And we appreciate your taking the time to share the information, and we wish you the best as you go forward with this effort.
Thank you. I appreciate it very much, Amy.
Thank you. Thanks to everyone for participating today. I do appreciate the questions and comments, and we hope you have a wonderful afternoon. We are adjourned. Goodbye.